It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Show. I'm your host, Derek Brown. As always, I'm joined by our NFL Draft lead analyst, college betting savant, and the man that said Travis Hunter should be rated higher than Shedeur Sanders on the College Football 25 game that's dropping, Thor Nystrom. What's up, baby? Let's talk some draft.
I'm very excited to get into this episode, D-Bro. You know, obviously, last time we did quarterbacks. Today, we're going to be getting into polarizing prospects. Generally, we start these episodes with a look at the prop market. We're going to be getting super deep into the props next week because we're hoping that combine props drop. If you hear our prayers, Prize Picks, or any of the books out there, we're hoping that we can go through all those next week. But I thought this time I'm going to commandeer the prop section, D-Bro, because something caught my eye that I want to get your take on that I think the audience is going to be more interested in, which is, so Sleeper releases their rookie ADPs last week. So we have sort of the first look of how the fantasy dynasty market is viewing these rookies. You see four or five rounds out there of the different guys slotted. I wanted to toss you a guy in each round of those first four rounds, where he's at. You tell me if he should go sooner than that or if he should go after that. Okay, you ready?
Yeah, dude, let's roll it.
Let's start in round one, a guy who caught my eye at the very end of round one and a guy we're going to be talking about here in a second because he's probably the most polarizing player in the entire offensive class this year is Keon Coleman, who is at 112 right now in the first ADPs that drop. You think he should be picked sooner than that or after that?
Oh, after that. We're going to talk about him here in a little bit, Thor, but after that, he's not a first-round pick in Dynasty rookie drafts. So, no, I can't do it.
Second round, you start to see more of the running backs. You know, we're going to be talking a lot more about it in an episode coming up about this running back class a little bit lower. One thing that caught my eye, Blake Corum in the first batch that came out was way up there for the running backs. He is at the 2-4, the fourth pick in the second round in those ADP rankings. Do you think he should go higher than that or lower than that?
Lower. And I know the counting stats, the touchdowns people are going to point to for Blake Corum. But you and I have talked about this off air, and we're going to get into this in later episodes when we go through the entire running back position. But his tackle breaking metrics were rock bottom. They were terrible in 2023. So, no, I'm fading that.
This one I'm just going to tee up for because I know this is your boy. But going to the third round, that you start to see even more running backs. Marshawn Lloyd is 3-8. He's a round and a half lower than Corum. Higher. I know what you're going to say, but higher or lower?
No. Higher. He should be good. The disrespect by people, Thor. Like, what are we doing here? Come on, man. No. Mock drafters out there, get this right. Marshawn Lloyd, second round pick. Let's go.
You're a bit higher on Lloyd than I am, but that is that's egregiously disrespectful.
Don't worry. You'll get there. We'll get there together.
And then the last one in the fourth round, this is crazy. So Joe Milton is the first pick in the fourth round. You start stacking those rankings above Pratt, above Rattler, above a whole bunch of guys. Oh, what's your opinion on that?
I don't disagree with the fourth round, but above Rattler? No. Like we people could hear our thoughts on Joe Milton and Spencer Rattler on the QB episode that's already live, but just real quick. There's no way. Like, Joe Milton cannot throw an accurate ball at times to save his life. No, he cannot go above Spencer Rattler. There's just no way, man. But what are your thoughts?
I totally agree with that. Joe Milton, I don't even know if he should be in the fourth round in this thing. Maybe even the fifth. You know, he's 1 in 1,000 shot that the light goes on. The one guy that caught my eye in the fifth round was Malik Washington of Virginia. A guy we're going to be talking a lot more about in once we get to the receiver episode, but I like him and he's getting the disrespect out there. But happy to talk about some dynasty rankings with the rookies.
Oh man, and I'm so ready for rookie draft season. And if you're getting ready for rookie draft season right now, you have to be using and discussing all these polarizing players. You have to be doing mock drafts. You have to be doing dynasty rookie mock drafts, and there's no better place to do that than at fantasypros.com/simulator. You can draft to your heart's desire, baby. Go through all the dynasty rookie drafts you can get your hands on, and hey, select or fade some of these players we're going to talk about on today's episode. So like Thor talked about, we are going to dive through some of the most polarizing players in the NFL draft on today's episode, teeing this up with the key questions about their draft profiles that people maybe are having some struggles with. Thor, let's kick this off at the quarterback position, man. Guy we talked about on the QB episode, Bo Nix. The big thing about Bo Nix that I want to hear from you, Thor, is Bo Nix just a system quarterback, and can he throw the deep ball?
Bo Nix is a system quarterback, yes. And he's going to be a game manager at the next level if he gets onto the field. And the deep thing in sitting back in the pocket, that was our concerns about Bo Nix. And it was, you know, D-Bro, we had talked about this before we went down to Mobile. That was the one element of his game we wanted to see down in Mobile. We know, Bo, that you can take the snap and shotgun and immediately turn to your left and get the ball out in 1 second to your first read. You're good at that. It was the downfield stuff, sitting in the pocket, the stuff he failed at Auburn that we didn't get to see as much at Oregon. We wanted him to sort of seize the day in Mobile on that. And that's what we didn't get to see. You know, that the system he was in Oregon inoculated him from a lot of the weaknesses that we saw at Auburn, sitting back in the pocket, surveying his options, the pocket presence. And does he have that the arm to consistently threaten deep? Or is it just a good enough arm where he can get some velo and a tight spin on intermediate balls? He didn't answer that for me. My take.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I mean, looking at Nix, and I'll add this. We have not talked about this prospect. We're not going to bring him up on this show. But if you've watched any of Troy Franklin's tape, you already know the answer. I'll just leave it at this. You already know the answer on whether Bo Nix can throw a deep ball or not. But keeping this show moving, man, J.J. McCarthy, he has been out there. People have been talking about it on social media. There are people that love J.J. McCarthy. There are people that do not like J.J. McCarthy, depending on what side of the aisle you're on. I'm going to ask you, Thor, can J.J. McCarthy succeed in an NFL offense that is not built upon the run, that is not run heavy?
Yes, he sure can. You know, and we saw him, your caveat there is why, you know, we have to modulate that a little bit, but we saw him succeed in an NFL offense, you know, these past couple of years. He won a national championship in Harbaugh's offense this past season. I think the most, you know, people get caught up talking about the volume stats with McCarthy. And we have talked about how if you start looking at the different stuff, the efficiency stuff, the high leverage stuff, the grading, the per pass metrics, he becomes one of the best quarterbacks in the class if you just flip it like that. But the thing that I think should be talked about more with McCarthy that's not, it sort of gets lost in the noise of that volume stats against the other stuff, is this is a kid where his special sauce, it is out of structure. It's throwing without his platform under him on the move. He can throw it on the money, can throw it downfield on the money, on the move, across the field if he wants to. You'll see that as well. This prospect, who, you know, was sort of this unicorn, this pony of a prospect, they put him into this sort of traditional pro-style offense. J.J. McCarthy was able to fit his skill set into Harbaugh's offense. He showed, of course, he can win within structure. That, I mean, that's a very large tenet of Harbaugh's offense. But then you also saw that special sauce stuff flowering out of that. Yes, when he goes to the NFL, gets into a different system, if it asks him to throw more, I don't think you're going to have any problems with that. And you're going to start to see, I mean, of course you're not going to have problems with that, but you're going to start to see more of that wild, rare skill set out of the pocket, on the perimeter, throwing on the run, making those decisions under pressure that is very, very rare. So I think that's what needs to be discussed more with McCarthy.
I don't disagree. And the thing with McCarthy that I want people to do is I want you to use that same J.J. McCarthy energy for Justin Herbert this year. And I know that may sound like out of left field, but all the narratives we've heard about J.J. is that, well, Jim Harbaugh didn't throw the ball much at Michigan because J.J. McCarthy's not very good. So if that is a truth and a narrative we really want to push, and people are really trying to push that, when the Chargers go out this year and they decide that they're going to be a run-heavy offense, and Herbert only throws the ball 515 times or 500 times, whatever it is, I want people to say, hey, maybe the Chargers didn't do that because Justin Herbert's not very good. Oh, wait, we're not going to talk about that because we've already seen that he's good and you're not going to use that same kind of energy? Okay. Well, very interesting. I will say that, Thor. But moving on to the running back position, man, a lot of people's crown prince, the RB1, supposedly of this class, Trey Benson. Can he be a volume back in the NFL? Because we saw various spurts and not a ton of volume for Trey Benson in college. Can he be a volume back in the NFL? And is he the clear RB1 of this class?
And clear RB1, that thing is more debatable. But for me, he's way up there. And he absolutely might be my RB1. As far as the volume thing, I think yes, and I think his eval, it's sort of clouded by the weird usage that Mike Norvell had for him at FSU. 2022, well, let's just go back in time with Trey Benson. He came from Oregon, transferred over. His true freshman year, he was mostly, you know, practicing. He was like the, what do you call it, the dude in practice, the scout team running back, whatever. End of that freshman season, he suffers this catastrophic injury, tears the ACL, MCL, lateral meniscus, medial meniscus, a hamstring tendon as well. The next year as a sophomore, he only plays 14 snaps because obviously most of the year he was rehabbing back from that injury. Then he ends up transferring to Florida State before 2022. 2022, his first healthy year back, he breaks the PFF record for missed tackles forced rate, became the first running back they had ever charted with over 50% in that in 2022, which means that he is breaking more than half of the tackle attempts that are made on him. And you see this stuff with the size and the speed combination. So when he's breaking those tackles and then he can get out into the second level, that's where you start to see the locomotive thing in the open field. But he would in 2022, he was still losing touches to this Trayshon Ward kid, who then Trayshon Ward got upset and he went to Kansas State because he wasn't getting enough, you know, in the platoon thing. Then this past season, Norvell, once again, always his platoon, he's running backs going back to Memphis. It was him and it was Benson and Toa Philly. So you would see Benson when he'd start to get sort of on a roll, then he'd be off the field for a series. Then he'd come back in. I think his game will play better when he starts to get that volume, and he is the guy to do it. And I think he can, because I've seen the concepts outside of the tackles. He's good at that, the zone stuff, the stretch zone on the outside. He's also pretty good, in my opinion, between the tackles. You have the power thing for sure, but he also makes guys miss in the hole. Definitely doesn't have joystick agility, but for a bigger back, for me, he's slippery. It's hard to square him up, especially in the hole, because he's got the one cut thing. Now you have to do an off-angle tackle. He's running through your arm tackles. I'm bullish on Trey Benson, and I think a lot of this is going to come down to his testing in Indianapolis. If he tests like a freak at that size, I think that's when he starts soaring up the boards. But I'm heading into Indianapolis. I'm tentatively bullish on him.
I mean, I think the volume question specifically is very real because, and what you talked about needs to be the context that needs to be added to that, but it's still a concern, especially for me. Like when I watch Trey Benson, I'm like, he has the size to be the volume back, but for everybody out there that has not gotten into Trey Benson's tape and not dove into his profile just yet, because I know we're still kind of early in the process, one game over the last 2 years with at least 20 carries, and he had 20 carries on the nose. He has not had more than 156 carries in each of the last 2 years at Florida State. So the questions about his about him holding up to the volume, especially when you give context about previous injury history, I think those things are real. Before we move over to our next running back, I'm curious, how do you think he's going to do in the short area agility, Thor? Because that's the one thing when I watched his film, that was one of my biggest questions. I don't question his long speed. He's got 4.4 speed. That's fine. I think it's more build-up speed. But where I see him kind of struggle is I think his burst is only average. But what do you think?
I think you're hitting on a super key under-the-radar thing for Benson in Indy, where a lot of the public, you're going to be, especially his 40, you know, you know the kid is 6'1". He's over 220 pounds, and I expect him to weigh in like that. And you're waiting for him to put on a show in the 40. But I think the NFL already knows, for his size, that kid has long speed. I think the thing the NFL is looking for is, what is that 10-yard split? Because I do think that that is the question. He doesn't have the burst that some of these guys have from the start, to the end of the acceleration. That's what makes it important for him to be able, for instance, to make a guy miss in the hole, because he's not blowing through it like some of these other different guys. But I think that's super important, D-Bro. It's a great point.
Well, and again, we're going to transition from Benson, but talking about another running back where maybe we've got some burst questions. He's definitely got the size. I mean, the guy's the size of a freaking Mack truck. Braylon Allen, how will he test Thor in Indy? And how? Here's the thing. Looking at his archetype, looking at the guy that he is, how does he fit in today's NFL?
Yeah, the testing thing is going to be key for Braylon too, the 40, and then the splits as well, because he's not going to test agile. We definitely know that.
What do you think 40 time is? Because we're going to get into combine props next week and things like that as we're previewing the NFL combine. Give me the off the top of your head, where do you think his 40 is? Because I got a number percolating around in my skull.
I'm going to say 4.59.
Ooh, we're close. 4.61 for me.
Okay, yeah. It's got to be somewhere right around there. The books, you got to set it somewhere. You know, I don't know if you go... I wouldn't imagine they do 4.6 flat because so many people like him. I would guess it's going to be... This one might be set too low, you know, where it's like 4.55 or like whatever.
I'm feeling a 4.57.
Yeah, he was lauded a little bit more for the speed for his size than maybe he should get credit for. I mean, we're going to find out next week in Indy. The things that you like about Braylon Allen, you know, he's the enormous back, 6'2", 240 to 245. We saw him play in two systems and more or less excel in two systems. You know, first it was his first couple of years. It was the old school Wisconsin offense, the traditional thing with the I formation, multiple tight ends, and just hammering the other team, run. And then, you know, a lot of times Allen would get pulled off the field on third down. Then this past year, they bring in Wisconsin as Luke Fickell. Luke Fickell hires Phil Longo. Phil Longo, the architect of that spread offense where they love to throw downfield. Phil Longo, you know, he was the mentor for Matt Corral. You go back to Ole Miss, the mentor for Sam Howell at UNC, then for Drake May. So, you know, in your heads, you can sort of picture those offenses. So then Braylon Allen this year, he had to become like the Javonte Williams of, you know, when Javonte was playing for him at UNC. You know, you have the single back, you're in the shotgun. You have less guys in the box, which Braylon probably appreciated, but certainly a different offensive scheme. And he showed that he could play in that as well. I just think for a guy like this, he gets comps to A.J. Dillon. It's like one of those like A.J., you know, I know A.J. Dillon. A.J. Dillon's a friend of mine. I served with A.J. Dillon. Sir, you're no A.J. Dillon. I don't think he's A.J. Dillon. And A.J. Dillon was the last, you know, running back in the second round. And he hasn't given back the ROI on that pick. For me, Braylon Allen, you can't consider him as that. I don't think he tests as well as A.J. Dillon. I also don't think he's as physical as A.J. Dillon. Like at Boston College, you know, not only would you see more of the locomotive stuff with A.J. Dillon, the superior speed, but A.J. Dillon also wanted to hurt people and punish people and run people over. That's one of my nitpicks with Braylon Allen is for this big semi-truck load of a guy. Sometimes, like in the open field, you'll see like a defensive back descending down on him. And it's like, bro, put your shoulder down, run this dude over. And then Braylon Allen will try to evade him. And then he's got to start his momentum again. And it gets lumbering. Now everyone's descending on him. Even if he is able to sort of evade this defensive back, the physicality, I want to see more of that. I'm very interested in what his testing profile is. But for me, seeing him as the poor man's A.J. Dillon that I do, for me, he's somewhere between late round three, early round four, pending those test results. How do you see him, D-Bro?
I don't disagree. And I'll give you, I'll hit you with my comp, Thor. We didn't talk about this yet. My comp for Braylon Allen is Peyton Hillis.
Oh, love it.
I agree with you. I don't think that he tests as well as A.J. Dillon. Braylon Allen reminds me, I mean, the guy is basically a dancing rhino. He has really good footwork, but we have questions about the speed and about the burst and things like that. But can he use his size more to his advantage? I agree. But the kid's got really good feet. I'll give him that. And so I understand trying to avoid some of the bigger hits, even at his size. But, you know, I think that's some of stylistically. And again, if we're talking about like how he fits in today's NFL. I mean, if you were to drop Braylon Allen into the 90s and said, like, look, like, give the guy 350 carries and let him just go, like, wear opponents down, I'm totally with that. And if you want to build a dynasty roster that is like the 90s, we're just going to ground and pound people, you got to head to Reality Sports Online. By now, I know most of you know and probably have heard of Reality Sports Online, the powerful fantasy sports platform where owners get to build and manage their fantasy teams like a general manager. But the question is, have you tried it? It's time to go see what all the buzz in the Dynasty community is about. Free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, multi-team trades, woohoo, fantasy franchise tags, contract extensions, first-round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and much, much more. Think it sounds complicated? It's really not. The best thing about Reality Sports Online front office is that it doesn't take any more time than a standard league. It just requires more strategy. Think you're among the fantasy elite? Well, this is the platform to test your mettle. If you're still not sure, you can test out a general manager skills for free in a mock free agency auction. If you like what you see, use the promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount on your team or league today. That's the promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount on your team or league today. Fantasy just got real at RealitySportsOnline.com.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums, but I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Callie, what do you say?
It was. And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made raisins dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me.
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to get you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on Storybutton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thor, all right, man, let's get into these wide receivers, dude. I think there's two really interesting guys that we picked out here. First guy we got to discuss here, Xavier Worthy. I think I'm a little bit higher on him than you are, but we have to discuss the size, Thor. Can Xavier Worthy succeed in the NFL at 6'1", depending on where you see the size metrics, at 160, 170, Can he succeed in the NFL at that size? And I'll add another cherry on top here for you, Thor. Can he play on the boundary?
Yes and yes. I'll start there. Okay. I'll start there. He can definitely get out the line. We've seen that, and he's a handful for dudes in space once he does. But yeah, it's sort of like the Tank Dell thing where, you know, when we watched down in Mobile last February, whatever, with the guys trying to get him off the line. It's like, well, you know, you walk up to Tank Dell and you're like, oh, well, this is going to be easy. And then, you know, it's the ball snapped. And it's like, where'd he go? You know, and you see this similar movement skills with Xavier Worthy. You know, you toss out Tank Dell, whether you toss out Hollywood Brown. We have seen the concept, right? Some people will toss out Deshaun Jackson for him as well. We've seen guys like this that have succeeded. I am a little bit lower, but not like... Certainly not. Like I like Xavier Worthy, just a little bit lower than you, because I think you're sky high on him, D-Bro.
I am.
You have the skinny frame, which I'm less concerned about that. But in conjunction with the thing I'm way more concerned about, it's the ball skills, and that hurts the reliability, the efficiency of the player. It was funny. You and I were talking about a rep where it melded his best traits with his most troubling ones against Alabama in the first game.
I know the one you're going to talk about. Go ahead.
Yeah, where he just dusted. Like, he had this defensive back in an absolute blender. You know, Texas is, I forgot if they were at the 10-yard line or the 5-yard line, whatever it was. And he gets this defensive back to bite inside. And he does a whip route to the outside. There was nobody close to him, like, on that side of the end zone. So it's a free touchdown. And Ewers does what he's supposed to do, which is put the ball on the outside, throw it towards the pylon. It was slightly, you know, so leading him, Worthy had to go outside of his frame for it. And he's done all the work at that point. Free touchdown. You're about to be celebrating. Ball clanks off his hands. It's one of the things you're concerned about with Worthy. You don't want to nitpick it too much, because you have to give the context that he did have the 120 targets last year, whatever. Texas trusted him a lot. They would pound him with those targets. The previous year, when he was fighting through a hand injury, he had even more of a dropsy problem that year. But it was the same sort of thing. They were just like, we have to get the ball in the lightning in a bottle guy's hands and then see what he can do. And there are, you'll see concentration drops. I also think he needs to work just a little bit on the ball skills overall, because sometimes you'll see him, even on the easy stuff, he'll go for the basket, catching it up against his body, where it's like, bro, you don't have to do that. Like, if we start catching it outside of your frame, it's going to be more efficient for you catching the ball, plucking it, and then remaining on the move. You want to be able to, this goes beyond ball skills for me, you want to be able to transition Xavier Worthy from the receiving process into a runner as fast as you possibly can. Just make that more efficient, because that's where he becomes super duper dangerous. It's with the ball in space in the field. He could take it to the house every single time. The speed, the elusiveness, everything like that. It's just, we need to get a little more efficient with that. And I saw some of that sort of bucket catching, the trapping, whatever, and different stuff like that, which did lead to a couple drops as well. But overall, I love the athleticism. I love that Texas trusts him as much as they did. I know that the skill with the ball in his hands in space is going to play.
I think he's a triple threat, man. I think he can win at all three levels. I'm sky high on Xavier Worthy. Like, any of the first round buzz that we've heard, I fully believe it. I think he should go in the first round. I'm going to add that on top of here, Thor.
Wow.
Going with another guy, D-Bro,
before we go on, are you not as concerned about the drops or the ball skills as say me or some other people?
No, because I'm not as worried about the drops specifically, because I went back and watched every one of his drops. A handful of those were concentration drops. Like the one you're talking about versus Alabama, yes, it looks bad. But the other part about that is he was near the sideline. I think he was looking at more of transitioning, trying to figure out where he was near the sideline and making sure that he got, like, you know, 1 foot in than he should have been because of his positioning. But it still happened. So I look at that as a total concentration drop, because it wasn't like, I don't think the kid has where his catching technique is bad. So I'm not as worried about the drops. And the only thing you're talking about for drops for him, I mean, there was only 1 year where he had over a 9% drop rate in college. So I don't even think we see the volume of drops to where it should be really a big talking point for him. Like, if you want to talk about drops, then fine. Let's have a conversation about Troy Franklin. But I don't think that Xavier Worthy, there's enough drops or worries on his film for me to even really have like that much to really say about it, to be honest, man. But a guy that we're going to have a ton to say about is Keon Coleman, man, because there are two polarizing views of Keon Coleman, and we're going to see where the NFL comes down on him. But dude, who is the real Keon Coleman? Is he the human highlight reel tape that we've seen all over social media and, you know, ESPN at times? Or is he closer to being the lackluster analytical profile the last few years at Florida State?
It's funny, you know, between Keon Coleman and the guy we just talked about, Worthy, I have them right now in my very, very rough draft wide receiver rankings right next to each other. But I feel pretty good about my read on Xavier Worthy. Keon Coleman, depending on the day, he goes up in my rankings, or depending on the other day, then he'll go down. He's so hard to sort of get your finger on Keon Coleman. It's such a weird evaluation. So we'll talk. He starts at Michigan State, Keon Coleman. He transferred to Florida State after spring ball this past year. And you're hoping for Keon Coleman going into this situation, like there's all the playmakers around him, Johnny Wilson. We talked about Benson before, Jordan Travis, a guy who's probably going to get drafted late on day three, all that sort of stuff on this contending team. And you're like, now we're cooking with gas. Keon Coleman, this is his round one audition, everything. And it actually started out exactly like that. Gangbusters. The first game against LSU, Keon Coleman goes nuts, 9 catches, 122 yards, 3 touchdowns. And he kept playing well through September into October, the Clemson game, 5 catches, 86 yards, 2 touchdowns. With one exception, the Boston College game, strangely, he was targeted 0 times, literally 0 times. So that was the one game in September and October. It's like, what's going on here? Then Keon Coleman ends up getting injured in the, I think it was a Wake Forest game. So this is in November. You're fast forwarding to November. And he played well against Wake Forest. But then the next game against, I think it was against Pitt, he misses that game. And then when he comes back, I think it was against Miami. But then Jordan Travis, the quarterback, gets injured the game after that. So in November, between Keon Coleman missing the one game and then having to play the multiple games with Florida State's horrific backup quarterbacks. You and I, D-Bro, we're not the biggest fans of Jordan Travis as a thrower, but he is way better than the backups we saw at the end of the year.
That's being kind. I think we've had some interesting remarks off air between you and I about Jordan Travis. We are not fans of his game because I'm sorry, man. Like, I like quarterbacks that are accurate, that can actually have something called ball placement. But anyway, go ahead.
I mean, so what you had with Coleman, again, after a pretty good start to the season down the stretch there in November, it was either Coleman's out or Coleman, I don't think he was fully 100% when he came back. And then in conjunction with that, you go from Travis, who as a thrower, the accuracy can be earned, different stuff like that, to just objectively horrific FBS quarterbacks between Tate Rodemaker, and then they're playing this true freshman, Brock Glenn, who not the kid's fault. He shouldn't have been playing. It was just this rash of injuries, whatever. And in November, that's when you saw Keon Coleman just totally disappear, like totally disappear. He had in those four games in November, one of them he missed. He ends up only having 8 catches. In the Louisville game, I think he was targeted like 6 times, and only one or two of them was charted as catchable. And he ends up having 1 catch in that game. But again, the quarterback was not competent. You look at the on-field profile with him, it gets really interesting. Love the frame. It's built in a lab. He plays very, very big. And he has awesome ball skills. Both the ball skills of, you know, like the thing of like going up and getting it, 50-50 ball, jumping in the sky. He's always touching that ball first. He's really good at the high-pointy thing. He's really good at positioning his body, you know, like when the ball is descending or wherever he is, trying to wall his defender off, different stuff like that. And then his hands are awesome. This past year, so Keon Coleman, I mean, here's another crazy stat from his season last year. Keon Coleman got targeted 87 times in 2023. Only 55 of them were charted as catchable. So there's 32 balls thrown his way, which were not catchable. And you can start to collect them really quick when you're watching his cut-ups. There'd be balls that, you know, the worm burners way in front of them, or balls, the errancy on one side or the other. Keon Coleman was only 11th percentile in catchable targets last year. His last year at Michigan State was 42nd percentile. This is indicative of a guy that was playing with poor quarterbacks, and they forced him into some bad situations. Coleman did have, so 30 targets last year were contested. Now, this is goes apart back into some of the concerns with Keon Coleman's profile, which is he doesn't separate super easy. He just doesn't.
He really does not.
He does not. And he's not a bad athlete. In fact, I think he's a pretty good athlete. The one thing that, you know, we're interested in, Debra, I think, is the 40 time there. But, like, I think, you know, like, he can get downtown on guys, but he's not going to singe them, right? And so he typically has company at the catch point, which is why downfield he has to have the really good ball skills like we're talking about. And then, the route running stuff, I think he has an idea, you know, of what he's doing there. But he's not the most agile guy. You know, it's not like he can just cut the corner, you know, like on the route break, whatever, and then accelerate out really quick. Like, he's just not that dude. I think there's some stuff he can do to improve the route running stuff. Like, I like the north-south with him. If we can toggle the tempo a little bit, it would be one way to keep sort of the defensive backs off the beat of your scent, different stuff like that. And then maybe becoming more efficient with his footwork into and out of the breaks, because he doesn't have that natural joystick agility thing. He becomes more efficient. The defensive back doesn't know where that route break is coming. I think that's where you can start to gain more separation in the intermediate area. But the contested catch thing is going to have to play for Coleman at the next level. I happen to think it will, but this does put him into that sort of phylum of receiving prospects where, like, we've seen this guy over and over again. Sometimes it succeeds, there's no problem, it translates. T. Higgins would be an example of this. Sometimes it doesn't at all, and it's like they go into the NFL and they're dead on arrival. Like a N'Keal Harry would be a good example of this,
or Tylan Wallace. That's another good example of this type of profile, where I think, and I remember a lot of people loving Tylan Wallace when he came out, and I was not a huge fan of Tylan Wallace, and I was like, look, man, like, And the same thing I kind of go back to with Keon Coleman. I think you're closer to the he's the human highlight reel and he can grow and he can be a better wide receiver. I'm closer to he's kind of the lackluster analytical profile that we've seen. And a lot of this comes down to, I think the stuff at the catch point is a function of, okay, like, I think he's a very good athlete, but in the sense, like, you will see him the burst after the catch, and he will hurdle dudes. So, like, I don't have any questions about, can he test okay? Is he going to jump well? Like, I think his vert's going to be fantastic.
Yes.
But my question about him is all the little things as a wide receiver, I question how much at a high, high level he's going to be able to do those things in the NFL, because we didn't see that at Florida State. Like, the stuff at the catch point I look at is a result of, okay, let's just call it what it is, poor route running. Like, he doesn't set up corners. He doesn't have nuance to his routes. A lot of his routes are rounded. He needs more suddenness at the top of his stem. And those are the little things to where it's the difference between you being able to separate late and early and you getting consistent separation, because you're asking, like, not every quarterback in the NFL, depending on his landing spot, you know this as well as I do, Thor, not every quarterback in college or the NFL is willing to throw those 50-50 balls. Not every quarterback's built like that. Not every quarterback you have see it throw at quarterbacks. You have other guys that are like, that have differing levels of when they, you know, survey the field of their idea of open and how willing they are to take those types of risks. Like, T. Higgins landed in a perfect spot with Cincinnati. Joe Burrow has zero qualms about doing that. But if you would have asked him, like, he lands in Detroit with Jared Goff, then we're probably talking about different results. So I think Keon Coleman, there's a wide range of outcomes. I come in at being on the lower range of that. But to transition us out of here, man, like, we got three more guys we're going to discuss here, hitting the trenches, as well as, look, I know that this is, we're going to talk about a lot of dynasty, we're going to talk about a lot of fantasy stuff, but you know what? Cornerbacks are still important too. So Jordan Morgan, man. He has been talked about this entire process. Some first-round love, other guys, like, you know, some analysts look at him as being like a second-round pick. And the big question surrounding him, Thor, can he be an NFL tackle, or is he just going to switch to guard when he hits the NFL?
Yeah, and that sort of, you know, we talk about polarizing prospects. The answer to that question, it's going to inform whether some people see him as a late first round guy. Those are the people that think he will hang as a tackle. And then the yep. other camp that thinks that he's not, he's headed to guard, you're going to see him as a day two guy. I fall in the camp of he's heading to guard and he's more of a day Same. Two guy.
Same. Yeah,
I mean, you have the smaller frame on the kid. He's 6'4" and change, a little over 310 pounds. The arm length isn't there. And you see some manifestations of this out. Like, I like his game. I'm going to do the nitpicking stuff first. But, like, you see some of the manifestations of this when he's out on the boundary of the offensive line, having to catch the edge rusher guy. You'll see overcompensations with Morgan where he knows he doesn't have that length and different stuff like that, where it starts to get the technique wonky because he puts himself in bad spots. One of the things is like when he's facing like the lengthy outside edge rusher who's then crashing downhill trying to take the outside shoulder, or if Morgan suspects that, you'll see some pretty exaggerated kick steps out, setting himself too deep, like right from the outset of the rep, right after the snap, whatever. And then the clever ones, they can then use that to counter him on the inside because he'll sort of over leverage himself to one side. You fake that way, you can cut on the inside. Just different technical stuff like that. For a guy that is that size, like, you know, Rashawn Slater, dude, he was extremely smooth with the footwork out there on the edge. He didn't get himself into some of those bad spots. So it's a little bit more bullish, at least the idea that it could be possible for Slater at the NFL. Certainly more so than I am with Morgan. The things that I like about Morgan, they're all things that I think are going to translate like gangbusters to the interior in the NFL. Especially in a zone system. Arizona ran a lot of zone concepts. You love how quick Morgan, when he's coming forward, gets out of the snap, and then how smoothly he can hit whatever shoulder the concept calls for. We're hitting the outside shoulder here. He's going to hit that target, and then he's going to swivel the hips, and you're sealed off from the play side now. You're not getting by him. When he gets those meat cleavers into you, he's controlling you as well. It's the thing of in pass pro out there on the perimeter, the way that it manifests, the lack of length, and then what he sort of will do sometimes to try to overcompensate for that. That's what would be my concern for him in the NFL. But I think as far as a guard, and especially a guard in a zone system, I think the projection there is very positive.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that just toss him in as a guard and let's we're off to the races, man. And I think you hit this perfectly. You hit the nail on the head. The biggest concern about him, and it's going to be the first talking point that everybody brings up about him, is the arm length. Like right now, at least the measurements we have out there, 32 7/8 inch arms. You're looking at most NFL tackles, the conversation starts at 34 inches. And that might not sound like a ton, but you're trying to get your mitts on these powerful edge rushers and trying to contain and seal the edge. That length matters, man, especially if you compare this against the NFL average arm length for guards is 33 inches. You move even further inside to center, that's 32 and a half. So I think that type of disparity, there are going to be teams out there that already have him crossed off as a tackle. They're going to say, you know what? No, you are a guard straight up, because they have their profiles on how they like their guys to be as far as drafting tackles and stuff like that. And I think that Morgan's just going to be a guy that automatically is looked at and viewed by the NFL. Now, maybe not consensus as far as the media and draft analysts. We're still talking about this, but I think there are numerous teams probably out there right now that already have him as like your guard, and we're going to evaluate you as a guard. But moving over to the other side.
D-Bro, just really quick, to contextualize this for the audience, because I think some people are like, oh, arm length, that's so stupid. Why does the NFL fetishize that? Or that's dumb. I'll tell you why. It's because the guy who has it's the same thing with UFC. It's why you see when they have the UFC fighters, why they have the arm length with that. The dude who has the longer reach dictates the dance. He's touching you first. Right. And so for a guy like Morgan, if you're especially projecting him to the NFL, if it's like the defender is always going to be leading the interaction right from the get, he's going to put his hands on Morgan first, can sort of dictate that. You have to have some really special traits for the NFL to be able to project. He's going to be able to overcome that rep in and rep out. And we will be able to put him at left tackle, for instance, where he played at Arizona in our organization, and trust him for the next 5 years, the next 10 years, whatever. You have to have some super duper special traits to be able to overcome some of that stuff. I'm just not sure Morgan gets over that threshold. That's why I see him as more of a guard.
Yeah, I don't disagree, man. But transitioning over to another belle of the ball that could be leading the dance into the first round, Chop Robinson, baby. Like, can he be an NFL every down player? We know the pass rush specialist stuff is there, and you're going to talk about it, Thor. But can Chop evolve into being, or do you think he already is, an every down NFL player? Because we didn't see that in college.
Yeah, I see him. I love the pass rushing utility. I really do. And because of the value of that, he gets pushed up on my board. As far as the run game stuff, needs work. Absolutely needs work. He has the skinny frame, and he also doesn't, you know, when he's going forward and he can fly downhill right off the snap, and now he's attacking, you know, the thing I was talking about like the offensive lineman's like, oh, no, this guy can take the outside shoulder. I have to overcompensate for that. Then Chop Robinson, like, he has the athleticism for that, the burst off the line, the speed. He has that bend so he can get around, cut the clean corner, right, take the direct path to the quarterback, different stuff like that. He starts to threaten you immediately off the snap, and then he has the counters off of it. I like when he's coming forward and he's attacking, the different stuff he does with his hands, and then how that flowers into the counter moves when he needs to do that. It's the thing of like when the offensive lineman is the one who is on the attack, and now Chop Robinson's like, you know, like he doesn't have the girth to hold that guy in place, set that edge, allow his teammates to flow to the play side if he's on it, whatever. A lot of times he'll just end up getting mauled backwards because of this. Is he going to be able to add a ton of weight to his frame? That I'm not sure about. He needs to get better with some technical things as far as the run game, you know, for that to become a discussion. He also misses some tackles, you know, a little bit more than you'd like. And this brings us to like the thing with the pass rushing utility. That where the rubber meets the road with Chop Robinson is if you look over the last 2 years in college football, he's basically the top of the list in terms of pressure rate, immediate pressure rate right off the snap. I mean, I'll just give you some PFF stats here. 97th percentile pass rush grade last season. Ooh. He was in the same phylum the year before. 90th. So these are 2023 numbers. 90th percentile on true pass rushes. 99th percentile on pass rush grade without play action. So more your sort of standard fare there. And then 95th percentile pass rush win rate. Very similar numbers the year before, but just like the year before, Chop wasn't converting all those pressures into sacks. So he piles up pressures easy as pie. Like, you know, it's like you and I breathe in, but getting them into sacks is, you know, is that a thing where it's like variance, small sample size, or is there a larger issue at play there? A guy who came out into the NFL, my neck of the woods, he ended up here, Danielle Hunter from LSU. D-Bro, you'll recall his last year at LSU. Piled up a metric ton of pressures, but zero sacks, and that's why he ended up falling down in the draft. Chop Robinson, between the questions about him in the run game and between the you know, relative lackluster sack numbers, I think it was 8 over the last couple of years combined for him. Those are the things that you're starting to nitpick, but just with the pressure rate, the athletic specimen coming off the edge, all that sort of stuff as a pass rusher is all aces.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you, man. Yeah, looking at a player, if we're going to have some boomer evaluations, only 11 and a half sacks over the last three years in college, those are not the stats you need to be looking at when you're looking at pass rushers and when you're trying to evaluate these guys. Look at win rates, look at pass rush grades, look at the film and stuff like that. That's what's going to be the real tail of the tail, man. And for a guy that we're going to say, oh, what does that tail say? Does he say that he can play on the outside, can play on the inside? Man, the last guy we're going to bring up here, Enos Rakestraw Jr. Is he a nickel corner, Thor, or can he play on the boundary? That's going to factor in heavily to his NFL draft stock. I think answering that type of question is going to be the difference in him being a back into the first round guy or maybe falling to the second. Where do you sit?
I agree. I think he could handle the outside, but when I watch that kid play, I would like him in the nickel. I'd like him in the slot.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I feel the strengths of his game. They all play up when you project him to there in the NFL as a nickel defender in the NFL. Whereas the weaknesses and some of the things, you know, like where this is our polarizing episode, D-Bro, and Rakestraw is right there at the top for defensive backs that people argue about. because of these disparate strengths and weaknesses of his eval. And I think, you know, again, you put him into the slot, it mitigates the weaknesses, plays up the strengths. If you put him on the outside in the NFL, that's where it could become problematic as far as that goes. The negatives on his eval, he's super duper skinny. He is handsy when he starts to lose a rep. He's one of those guys that will start to get grabby out of the route break or sometimes at the catch point, different stuff like that. And then average speed. I mean, he's not, you know, you don't have to measure him with a sundial, but it's average speed for a cornerback. What you like about him, the long speed is maybe average, but the agility, I think he's going to test off the charts in the agility. That's the thing. It's really difficult to shake that guy in a route break. Anything short, intermediate, whatever, he is on you right away. He is extremely feisty. He wants to get up in your face. Sometimes he talks too much on the field. He's one of those guys. Absolutely a tone setter. This is one of the reasons why I like him, the idea of him in the slot, because there's very few cornerbacks in this class that are as gleeful crashing downhill, running that alley as Rakestraw. The second he knows it's a run, bye-bye, I'm going to hunt. And I like his form tackling too on it too. It's not just for show. This is a guy who's not necessarily looking for the knockout blow. He'll go at your hips. You know, a lot of times he is trying to disable your hips. But with the bigger guys, he will also go low, you know, with the knees or, you know, lower, whatever, trying to chop people down. He is aware of the kind of player he is. He's not trying to, you know, go up top against a Braylon Allen, 245-pound guy. He plays effectively and he plays within himself in terms of that. It just becomes on the boundary in the NFL. Is that speed thing going to be an issue? What about the physical receivers? Because Rakestraw is more on the skinny side. Different stuff like that. Those would be your questions. But as far as the feisty sort of tone setter guy, he is near the top of the class as far as that sort of a thing. Last year, a way, way, way better cornerback prospect. We didn't have any concerns about playing on the boundary. But like where some of these traits, you were like, we were all celebrating. It was Witherspoon who went to the Seahawks. The guy, I mean, we talked about that all spring. This guy absolutely, like, if you could just sort the PFF Ultimate and only the run defense reps of just Witherspoon just flying downhill, whatever. Like I said, it's gleeful. And you see very few defensive backs that it's like that. It's, you know, cornerbacks like that. Rakestraw is one of them. I think his game plays up in the slot where it'd be very, very difficult to shake. You get more help over the top if you need it. And then you're closer to the ball so you can crash down immediately and run defense.
Yeah, I don't disagree, man. I think that he can play on the perimeter. I don't think it's a spot where you need to ask him to do that consistently. But if you were to tell me you put him in an extremely zone-heavy team where he could play off guys, get physical, can kind of press depending on how fast some of the receivers are, and then you're asking him to also slide in, maybe shadow a guy into the slot. So, like, could he do that, play a 50-50 boundary and nickel? I think that's possible, man.
1,000%. I think this is very fun, D-Bro. We are moving now in on NFL Combine Week. I can't wait to talk about that. And again, I'm crossing the fingers that these books will drop the Combine props because I would love to go through with you. Whole coterie of over-unders in the 40s for the Combine, and we go over-under on them, you know, like we do privately on the telephone and do it on an episode of this. So everyone cross your fingers for next week's episode.
Absolutely, man. So yes, everybody, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Show. Again, the easiest way that you could support this show, head over to whatever you consume your podcast, give us a rate and review. I know everybody says, oh, it helps the show. It really, really does. So support the show. It takes 30 seconds to do so. Thor and I will be back next week to preview the NFL Combine. Thank you for tuning in. We're out of here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast. If you love the show, the best free way to support us is by leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Follow us on X, Instagram, and TikTok @FantasyPros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.